Hello and welcome to another episode of Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and today I'm delighted to be joined by two inspirational educators from St. Joseph's Institution International School in Singapore, Russell Bennett, a physics and maths teacher, and Steve Phantom, teacher of music. Over the past 10 to 12 years, they've been developing a robust coaching culture at SJI, transforming the way staff engage with professional learning and personal growth. Today, they'll be sharing their coaching journey, insights, and the impact it's had on their colleagues and the wider school community. Whether you're new to coaching or already immersed in it, you're going to find this conversation incredibly inspiring. Russell and Steve, it's a pleasure to have you join me on the podcast today.
I was happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, lovely to be here, Richard. Thank you for inviting us.
Fantastic. Let's jump straight in, gentlemen. A question for you both, just to kick things off. Could you give us a taste of your background in education? What's your story prior to life at SJI, and what's your role now that you're in SJI? And Russell, we'll kick off with you.
Sure. I started teaching in 1999, so in the last millennium. And I've taught in a few countries, Sri Lanka, England, Norway, Australia, and now in Singapore. And I've been a science, physics, and theory of knowledge teacher. And about 10, 15 years ago, I became interested in coaching. And 10, 11 years ago, was given the chance to bring coaching to school. So it's been great so far.
Fantastic. Steve, yourself?
Yeah, I had a life before teaching, actually. I worked in the theatre as a sound engineer. Then I decided to take that to the next level and go into acoustics and building engineering. And that didn't work out. That wasn't really my thing. So I decided to take my music degree and train to be a secondary school teacher with my one-year-old, two-year-old boy in Tag at the time. Retrained and moved to Dubai for 3 years. And then 13, 14 years ago, my family and I decided to move to Singapore and join SJI International. And we haven't moved on since. And one of those reasons is the coaching program.
Fantastic. And we'll jump into that today. Fantastic. That's great, guys. Russell, as you think back through your education journey, at which point did coaching come into the picture? Was there maybe a specific person introduced you to it, or did you come across it maybe in something that you read? What inspired you to give it a go?
Yeah, well, there was a specific person and a specific time. I suppose I was something which seems really small and tiny now, but I was a period of change. I'd had a disagreement with a line manager and was just questioning things. And a friend gifted me 1 hour with a coach. They were trained in coactive coaching at the CTI. And about 20 minutes into this coaching session, I thought, this is what I want to do. I want to train as a coach, and I want to bring it to schools. I want to bring it to education. And I'd been interested and been a part of building up students, raising, I call it human capital. And I was also interested in it with staff as well. And I just thought, my goodness me, this can work for a great many things. And I think schools need this.
When you mentioned, that's fascinating, when you mentioned literally 20 minutes into a gifted hour of coaching, what was it in that 20 minutes that made you think, you know what, this is terrific stuff? And that's a short space of time to make that decision.
Yeah, maybe that doesn't say the best things about how I make decisions, maybe. it was the process of getting rid of all the chaff and just like cutting through what's at the heart of the matter. What's important here to you? What do you want? And we started exploring values, and there was activities. It wasn't all words and talking and questions. There was also hands-on activities and using resources. And I just thought it appealed to teachers, are usually quite strong in pedagogy. I thought, this is more than just questions and answers and someone listening to you. It's really a process, a facilitated process to help you to help yourself. That's what I loved about it.
I love that phrase. It's a lot more than just questions and answers and talk. So listen, that's really helpful, and folks, that'll resonate with a lot of people who are listening. Russell, Steve, same sort of question to you.
After arriving at SJI International, I soon quickly got the role of head of grade, And Russell happened to be one of my tutors on my team. And he was one of the people who said, hey, he saw a need clearly as I was head of grade. And he said, do you want to be coached? And I think Russell's hit the nail on the head where you get to feel seen and heard properly when you're coached. And I just noticed that straight away. It really resonated with my past theatre self. And I was hooked virtually immediately through being coached by Russell. I then went ahead and got trained through the school. They're really generous to train me. And then I paid for some of my own coaching. And it was literally the best training I've ever had. It was transformational. And that's one of the reasons I've stayed at SJ International. One of the reasons I've gone on to go to ACC and nearly PCC level. It's been transformational, and that's been my journey so far.
Fantastic. You mentioned you're connected with your past theatre self, Steve. Yeah. I'm intrigued. Tell me a wee bit more about that.
Yeah, I think theatre people are people who want to lift you up. They want to be together in a community, and they want to raise you up to be the best that you can be, because there's no money in it. There's no profit. It's for the art itself, Anna. And I see coaching and coaches and the relationship between the coach and the coachee being exactly the same. It's just, as Russell said, raise human capital. So everybody's seen and heard to be their fullest self and then go out and make that impact on the world. And that's the ripple effect. And I see that the same as theatre, or the theatre that I worked in anyway.
Yeah, I suppose one of the advantages of, as you said, having a previous life before education, and working with a group of people, the key phrase you've used there is people who want to lift you up. So I'd imagine, you know, you folks in your position now and others who've joined, I suppose the coaching approach now at SJI are wanting to lift others up. So that's a lovely way of describing it, Steve. Russell, tell us a bit more about how coaching emerged at SJI in those initial years. So what shape did it take initially, and what were the main challenges as you endeavoured to, I suppose, kick things off developing a coaching culture?
Okay, it's a big question. The shape and challenges stand out to me from what you say there. The shape, I think we were quite lucky, really quite lucky at the beginning, really supportive leadership, both principal, vice principal, who did all the timetabling, and the head of PD, who had all the purse strings and actually chose where money was spent. And it all came together, and the principal had heard about coaching, didn't know much about it, but I want to have it in the school, and I've heard that you know something about it. Perhaps you could start something, we'll take it from there. The vice principal, who did all the timetabling, she used her cunning timetabling magic to find ways that, let's suppose, there was the student classes needed 24.7 teachers, but we've got 25 teachers, science teachers, in the school. There was 0.3 left over in the science allocation. So she gave me 2 lessons per week for coaching. And that money, in a sense, is already spent by the school. So it didn't actually cost anything extra, but it gave me the time to be able to develop stuff. So I thought that was really quite clever. And I think that really helped shape our process of having time given to the coaches to do that role. So it was never I've got to do this and doing all my teaching stuff and whatever other roles you've got in addition to that. It was actually, I've got this time and I can dedicate it to support the development of others. And that's what was done. We had a couple of strategies early on. One was first quality, then quantity. And the whole point behind that was, if we want people to, over the years, come into coaching for it to grow, they have to think it's worth their time.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So for that, we have to have school's not really a business, but we need to have a quality product. And in order to do that, it was, well, we need to invest in the coaches. So the head of PD, Dan Brown, who sadly has moved on to another school, he says, well, what's the best courses? What coaching courses are there? What are the best ones? Why? And so we looked at a few, and I genuinely try to find ones outside of the one that I was trained in, just to try and find out. And I knew there were some good ones. And I came back and I said, you know what? I still feel that this is not only a good one, but I think it's the right one for our school. He went on the coaching course himself and he completely agreed. And so we ended up from the beginning having something which is bespoke for our school. It was purely voluntary. That was a part of it. And the head of PD was really, Dan was really clear on, I don't want it to be linked to performance management, or some appraisal, I think we call it in England. I don't want it to be linked to in any way people being assessed. I just want it to be a self-reflective tool for teachers to develop themselves in the way they want to develop themselves. Not that the head of PD wants you to develop, but you, the teacher yourself, what do you want? So I think that shape at the beginning actually helped reduce challenges which we could have had. And I've heard of there's some schools doing coaching in great ways and there's journeys and all, and we've all got our challenges and ups and downs. I think those early approaches reduced our challenges, to be honest.
It also created a frictionless space for our colleagues because nobody felt judged. You know, we're going to just raise you up. We're going to use coactive, CTI coactive techniques and maybe some other stuff that we've learned, but it's all about you, for you, and trust and confidentiality and compassion are going to be the center of the conversation. And so I think that's why it still has legs all these years on, Richard, because they trust in that system. But it took that bold step by Dan and Russell initially.
Different values have just been touched upon there by Steve. From the very beginning, we said confidentiality and dignity need to be at the core of the decisions that we make for setting up our systems. So that's from systems to set up the coaching chemistry for how the pairs between the coaches and coachees were made up, from to decisions about how we use coaching agreements, what is going to be reported back by whom, how we're going to fit into our frameworks, well-being issues in the school. So we had that from the beginning, and actually at the end of that first year, that we went from three coaches and three people who had been coached said, I want to be a coach. And so they were welcomed onto the team. There were six of us and we reviewed everything, reviewed our mission, reviewed our values. And we said, no, confidentiality, dignity is great, but empowerment, we need to add that in too. And yeah, I think in terms of shape, it was quality first, then quantity. We put out, a call for coaches, just trying to find people who already knew something about coaching, already had a predisposition towards coaching, to kind of make our life easier in the first year, make it more likely to be successful. But that combination worked incredibly well. And then we just had this wonderful support from the leadership, senior leadership in the school. I think that really helped to reduce the challenges and really helped us to shape things in a way that was sustainable for 1, 2, 3 years and currently 10 years down the line.
Fantastic. Fantastic. A couple of things that I've written down there, and that's really helpful, particularly for folks who are listening. But initially you talked about the efficiencies around timetabling. I think that's an important one. I think in some schools, if we really do look at the timetabling, there is a bit of scope in places. Absolutely. To find a bit of time. And in your case, lovely example, where that time was already there and wasn't actually costing any extra money, which is a key thing at the start, and certainly in those early days. And then, yes, by all means, a strategy of quality first. So you want folks to come along and experience really high quality coaching. But one thing that really strikes me is this idea that it's not linked to performance management, because that quite often is the case. Certainly in business, you know, coaching's brought in as a performance management tool, and quite often the word intervention is used, and people think, okay, is there an issue here? You know, what are we trying to do? But you've created this, I suppose, this opportunity for people, and Steve used the phrase frictionless spaces. Isn't that lovely? A lovely image, you know, where somebody comes in, there's going to be no judgment, and this is about you to try and lift you up. And I think, you know, what better place to start a program of coaching in a school? Steve, coming right up to speed now, 2024, what does coaching look like at SJI. So if I was an educator working in your school, what opportunities would I have to experience coaching?
Well, in 2024, there are currently two strands, and I'll just discuss them very briefly. There's the PCP, or the Professional Coaching Programme, because we love an acronym here.
Absolutely.
And in education, if you know. And in 2024, there were 8 CTI-trained coaches. That rotates every year, depending on people leaving and people just not wanting to be coaches. Again, the coaches are in this low-hanging fruit environment as well, and they might not want to coach the following year. But the universe always seems to provide, and we have 7 or 8 coaches every year. And they have between 1 and 4 coaches. Russell and I have the largest load currently. And in that year, the coachee agrees to see and signs off on an ICF focused coachee agreement of 10 meetings between 50 and 60 minutes each. The first meeting is like a chemistry session. The last one is like a completion meeting because, and we think this is really important, at the end of the year, that relationship between the coach and the coachee dissolved. And we feel it empowers the coachee to choose what's next. That might be to carry on with the same coach or not to be coached or to be a coach or whatever. But they have that. It's no obligation, no judgment at all. And it also gives the coach an opportunity to say, actually, I'd like to move on from that individual too. At the moment, we've got approximately 1,650 hours, coached hours at our school, and about 95%, what's the word looking for? Attendance rate, I suppose.
Okay.
Most coaching sessions are attended, and a high percentage of folk return the following year to be coached or have a year off maybe and then go back into it. So there's a high return rate. That's one strand, one stream. The other strand or stream is C4PD, or coaching for professional development. And kind of we call that coach approach or coaching light, because we wouldn't employ all of our coactive tools inside of there, because it's a shorter focus on just the professional domain of a colleague's life. And we feel it adds not only financial value to the PD experience, because we know at schools it's very expensive to send somebody off to, say, example, Thailand to do a Cat 2 IB music course, but also it adds human capital value in the same space that coaching does. So those are 2 strands and 2 overviews.
That's helpful just to hear that, you know, the separation of those two, as you say, clear streams and options for folks. Russell, could you share with us maybe some examples of the impact that that year-long series of coaching sessions has had on some of your colleagues?
I think it is probably the thing that is the key part. We have people, by committing to do 10 meetings in a year, people are committing to a journey up, down, sideways, meandering, coming back to their core mission. And it's, I think, it's a natural part of coaching that you might get to an end of a coaching topic and it's like, what next? And I get the impression that if some people think, what I want to do coaching for, I've achieved, okay, I'm going to stop now, that would lead to a break in the coaching learning of all. And I've actually found that when people get onto their second or third coaching topic, sometimes they're getting closer towards the thing that really impacts them, perhaps for many years afterwards. So by having this pre-commitment, you're going to do 10 meetings across a year, people will find their other topics. And if the coach and coachee have developed that chemistry and trust through and that confidentiality and dignity and empowerment in the relationship, they will find the things where they blossom, where they flourish. So I think that's been really, really important by having it that long. But so what types of topics have people used or explored? There's quite a bit. We have a coaching survey at the end of every year, and some of our questions are trying to find what proportion of what you do is to directly with your role, indirectly with your role, nothing to do with your role. And we get quite consistently around 70%. Self-reported, 70% is directly and indirectly with their role. So we've had people completely revamp the grade 7 and 8 science curriculum, for example. And it's not that, oh, there's a review coming up, we need to do it. They wanted to redo it. And they wanted to make it fun and really engaging for students and approach it in a way that they've never approached it before. So the coaching facilitated processes that in just different ways to what they'd approached pedagogy and curriculum development before. And they came up with, they said they just tried lots of different things and different, they pushed themselves beyond what they originally would have thought possible. And I think that it was a great initiative. We have an amazing university counsellors here in our school. I've never seen anything like it anywhere. And they have founded and started, I don't know what it stands for, I think the Global University Counsellors Connection, GUCC. They have put together from scratch several years ago, university counsellors fly in from all around Southeast Asia. I think it's something like 12 countries for the last two or three years have come in. And they organize these series of workshops, which are really highly regarded because the numbers have just gone up and up and up. And so there's not many university counselors in the school, and they get over 100 people from 12 countries fly in specially for their event. Well, lots of the ideas were developed in coaching, and all credit to the staff who actually made all the choices and everything themselves. But we did help facilitate the processes that was the cauldron of where all of these ideas were developed. If I was to highlight one group that has really disproportionately, positively benefited from coaching in our school, it has been the heads of department, heads of grade and faculty. We've had, it's at least a dozen have had at least a year of coaching. Some have stayed in coaching for years afterwards. And when there's people coming in for the first time into a role, there is there's lots of issues to feel through and process through that has been able to be dealt with in a really safe space. Sometimes there's people implementing new initiatives or getting to learn what kind of a leader am I going to be with this group or with this person or in this situation. These ideas come up and they really help make progress. So if I was speaking to principals and vice principals, I'd say it will really help develop your middle leaders. And I think that then really supports the senior leaders because they've got people who themselves have had their human capital raised and are able to handle so much more without needing kind of redirection back on track or by the senior leaders. I think it actually helps make the senior leaders' life easier. I've had that feedback from them. From SLT, senior leadership team members in the past. And there's one other, was a really small one. I really think it's worth mentioning because it came up in the C for PD, the coaching for professional development. It was in our pilot. And we have they're not a vulnerable group, but of our groups in school, I consider them one of the more vulnerable, the boarders, because they're not with their parents. They're not with their family. Their family might be literally 1,000 kilometers away. And they were wanting to just raise the systems in the boarding house, and someone went on this course. He did the C for PD event, which Steve actually had the biggest hand in designing. And they came back, and he was just like charged up and about doing it. And we went through the C for PD process, and he basically just made the handbook for it, which is now still in use and is still helping to make sure from safeguarding, looking after the well-being, developing the borders in our school. And so it's impacted what could be a vulnerable group and is helping create a cradle for them. So there's just one of many things that have... I could go on answering this question for quite a while, so I think I'll stop there.
No, that's terrific. There's a couple of things just I wanted to pick up on. And it's amazing to hear the variety of things that your coaching program has impacted. A couple of words that I picked up on. First of all, it seems to be a great tool for facilitating ideas and thinking for all of those different people that you've mentioned. So it's a great way of providing an opportunity for people to think through those ideas and create them. But also that seems to then lend itself to being a great motivator. There seems to be a great motivation amongst those people because they're actually seeing things happen. And, you know, the coaching conversations, like you said, right back at the very start, you know, Russell, it's not just about questions and answers. It's actually about having impact on what you're doing yourself, but also on other people. So there's a list of things there already where the school has really benefited from the coaching program. And you said one of the key ones there is middle leaders. And a lot of schools are looking around at the moment to say, how can we develop our middle leaders? So there's a perfect example over, you know, a 10 session program where people have that freedom to come in, choose themselves what they're going to look for and what they're going to talk about, but ultimately then see real impact. There was one thing came to mind, Russell, and I'd just be interested to hear. You talked about a chemistry session at the start. Is there ever, and this quite just came into my head, is there ever a scenario where the chemistry session is suggesting that there mightn't be a good fit between coach and coachee?
Yeah, it's a great question, because we're saying all the good things that have happened, but of course we've had our learning process and our ups and downs too. I'd say we have about a 95% hit rate if you look across time. I'd say once every couple of years or so that there is a pairing that for whatever reason isn't serving the coachee. So the system is I'll find out and I'll go and speak to the relevant coachee, the member of staff, and try and find what it is. In some, about two or three cases, I think I can only think of five or six situations in total, to be honest. I think it's about that. In two or three of them, it was someone had misunderstood what coaching is. So clearly on my orientation and process at the beginning, something had not worked there. But what they were looking for was mentoring. And our school has a separate mentoring program, which uses a different methodology to our coaching program. So they were able to be diverted over there. Other times is people were, yeah, actually, I thought I wanted coaching. To be honest, my friend said, oh, it would be great, and I wasn't sure. And I'm sure it's fine, but it's just not for me. That's happened a couple of times fairly early on. And then I think there's been a couple of times where maybe genuinely it was the coaching chemistry. And so we have moved someone over.
But I think that's super helpful just for people to hear the reality of, you know, coaching, that a 95% hit rate is terrific when it comes to, you know, the chemistry sessions. But the reality is there'll be some sessions where people think it's just not the perfect fit. And I think being able to be open to that is a very, very healthy approach to that program. And people can either move to either another coach or move out of it just for now. But having that option, I think, is really useful. Steve, you'd smiled quite a bit whenever I asked that question. Is there anything you want to throw in to that particular question?
Well, yeah, about contracting, I suppose. So as we move forward as a team of coaches, we've moved towards the ICF standards and ethics, and actually calling, you know, speaking to them and referencing them when we do our coach training, because Russell and I not only do the coaching and the admin, but we also organise the coach training. And so we have two strands of that, a professional side and a personal side. On the professional side, we're referring to the coactive model and the ICF core competencies and the standards and ethics. And of course, inside of there is contracting. And sometimes you have to recognize that your coaching's not going well, or you're not adding value, or your client's not getting what they want. And you should really be raising that. So as we move down and mature as a group of people and start to realize, yes, these things do happen, then we have to let each other know that it's okay to have a conversation with the coach, offer an work solutions, and then find out what's next for them, rather than just trying to get to the end of your 10 sessions in the year and let them dissolve. So yeah, we are recognizing that, and it takes us to the next level of professionalism, which is what we're aiming for.
But I love that phrase you use there, Steve. You know, as we mature as a group, you know, you're constantly reviewing the process, which is, yeah, you know, you need to be open to these things, which is going to be very helpful for listeners. Steve, if I can stick with you, I'm quite sure many of our listeners are intrigued by this C4PD coaching option. Russell's already alluded to it a little bit. Could you unpack that a little bit more? The detail around what could I expect if I signed up for some C4PD coaching at SJI?
Well, I suppose the first point to go from is why. We know that many people don't want to do the 10 sessions and commit to 10, 50 to 60 minute sessions. And we thought, how do we push coaching into the corners of the school without making people do this? And we came up with C for PD, which is coach approach, or like coaching light. Like I said before, we do coactive tools, but it's very much focused on why they would like to do the PD. Not that they've been sent to do something by the head of department, but even if they have, how does it talk to the reason they got into teaching? How do you think it's going to support the students in the classroom? What's important about that? What else? And so spending time in these five sessions that we do helps unpack that, take it forward, and they own that. And it just adds so much more value than just being told to go on PD. So the first session will be like a mini chemistry session, but really unpacking the values behind it, professional values, the pedagogical values, again, the philosophical reasons why you came into teaching, and then go, okay, what's it going to look like when you get back from your training? And then you have three or four more sessions where you check in, you kind of develop that narrative of the reason they went there in the first place. How's that cascade back into the department? How are you flourishing from this? How do you think it's impacting the students? How are we going to measure this? Which is very, very important in coaching in education. And what's next? And you often find that when you coach that individual, they go to really unexpected places and it's kind of amplified PD. So they've come in with one reason. All of a sudden it's just gone into these new places that they'd never thought of before. And often some people, it transforms so much that they move departments or they decide that they want to implement something completely different. But what it does do, and from the school's perspective, is make the PD more financially viable because it really sticks. It sticks to the teacher. It sticks to their colleagues. It sticks to the kids, and it makes them be the best teacher that they can be. And we retain them as colleagues. And for what? For about an hour and a half's work with some pretty recognized coaching skills. So, you know, you could pass those skills on to your head of faculty or your head of department, and they can do it too. It's not voodoo magic. So it's been really impactful. And just one example, if this helps, I did a C for PD with an English teacher who was going on, he was going to go on a course to try and develop how he would get across, some English concepts to students whose second language was English. Because, of course, in our evolving international landscapes, we've got different demographics of students coming in. And at the end of the session, the guy left the English department, literally resigned from it, and helped and developed the English, the EAL department, which has expanded. He just basically shifted his career. Because he found out what was really important to him. And therefore, we get a better colleague, the kids get a better experience, everyone's a winner.
Yeah. I think, you know, folks who are listening to this, and I mean, I haven't come across this, you know, application of coaching before, certainly in a school setting. But, I mean, as a former principal myself, you know, either attending PD or sending people to PD or people coming to me and saying, listen, I'd like to go to this particular course, usually the extreme is, you go to the course and you come back and you fill in one sheet and you hand it in and it's maybe filed away somewhere. You might get 10 minutes at the next staff meeting, you know, and let's cascade a little bit of what you've learned. But ultimately, the impact of that day is fairly minimum and in some cases no impact at all. So the idea of, and you talked about five sessions, for somebody to come along, have chosen a particular professional development course to go on and then say, right, let's now have the first coaching conversation before I go to this course. To unpack, you talked about your teaching values, what's going to be the impact of this, why do you want to do this, go on the actual PD and then come back and have a number of sessions after that, because that's huge. Usually we come back full of enthusiasm with a couple of really good books, and then day one, two and three, the waves come over and school life takes over and all of a sudden, you know, the impact's minimal. But to know you have a further two, three or four coaching sessions focused specifically on that course that you've been on, you've given fantastic examples of the impact it's had, not only in those people, but on the school itself, which is fantastic.
Yeah. And because in the first meeting prior to the training, you have called out the values, called out the philosophies, called out the things that really matter to you, it just raises awareness. And then you amplify that awareness in the following sessions. And it becomes, the gravity of it becomes really powerful and you just move towards it. And inevitably, you're going to get a better outcome.
Both of you, I think, have hit on the nail two of the key ideas. I just would like to bring them together. How did C4PD get started? It was our head of PD who used to work in Ofsted many years ago. And so he always reads the Ofsted report each year and found that coaching, was, he said in the same report, there was something saying that something was about coaching and completely separately was about PD, that self-reported was the least impactful PD that people would go on. And he knew from operating the budget that it was the most expensive. And he called Steve and I in and he said, look, I've just read this. I don't want this to happen anymore. We've got this coaching resource in the school. How can we design something so that we make the money, large amount of money, particularly people do get sent to other countries nearby, stay in hotels and flights. How can we make that more impactful? And so that combination of the money, but also a series of follow-up meetings, which is just 90 minutes in total of someone's time, but they have brought out the values of what makes someone tick in education, and then they're looking for it in their PD. And then Steve mentioned it raises awareness, and they come back from the training, and then they've that's generated their responsibility. Actually, this is important. I want to do this. It's a winning combination. It really is.
And how many other industries have that level of investment?
But I think a key word you use, Dave, is amplifying PD. You know, that's it in a nutshell. You know, and there's amazing opportunities for professional development out there. So why not, you know, take them, but amplify them. And when you get examples of people actually doing almost a career shift, I mean, that's amazing.
That might be also part of how amazing that Steve is as a coach as well, though.
Credit where credit's due. Fantastic, gents. This will really genuinely inspire people who are listening to this because, I mean, we haven't come across this before. Russell, if I were to ask you the question, and we've touched a couple of things maybe already, but what are the unique selling points of coaching at SJI in general? What would come to mind?
I'd split it into two kind of categories. One category is at the user end that the coachees might be aware of and feel. And the other is on the behind the scenes organizing, how we set things up. I think we're at a LaSallian school. So it's SJI is a St. Joseph Institution is a LaSallian school, but there's many of schools around the world. And it's been an educating body for like 360 years. And even back 350, 360 years ago, investing in your staff was considered important.
Fantastic.
And I don't think that was happening a great deal in England 50 to 100 years ago,
no.
Let alone 360 years ago. So really forward thinking.
Yeah.
So I think that is why there's money to spend on staff in this school. And you've also got this culture where you've got the heads of PD are willing to spend it, and the boss is willing to have quite a big budget for it. So I think that's one of the behind the scenes thing. Another behind the scenes thing is that we have got, I think Steve mentioned we have training meetings for the coaches ongoing through the year. Every 3 school weeks, we have a training session for the coaches. Now we don't teach new things because Steve and I don't put ourselves in that category, and we don't pretend that we are teaching coaching or teaching coaches. But what we've all been on the same courses at CTI, and we revisit a topic or a subtopic, and we arrange coaching dyads, triads. And it's really about the group facilitating deeper learning of the group. And I think that is, I've not heard of that happening in many other places, to be honest. It's you go on these courses and then you get the exposure on the courses, and what trains you, it's your coaching meetings, which is good. That applies to us as well. By having 10 meetings in a year, everyone's gaining 10 hours, or if someone's got 4 or 5 coaches, 40 or 50 hours in a year, that's actually what's raising the quality. What's helping raise the equality efficiently and effectively is we keep reflecting on ourselves in a really safe space, in a group, in a kind of in within our four walls. We have our little systems and the way we do things. every 3 weeks, you're reflecting on that. I think that is the key ingredient that is really underestimated. And I've kept pumping how important this is. And I think we've benefited from that hugely. So I think that is a fairly unique thing. You mentioned the funding model earlier with our amazing magic from the timetabling. I think that's been really important at the beginning. I want there to be a coaching department, which is under the pupil teacher ratio. So it's permanently in. We're not there yet, but who knows, maybe one day. So I think that's another behind the scenes thing that's important. What about on the level of the receiver, the coachees? I think the coaching chemistry that we've alluded to, we weight the dice in our favor. So all of the coachees or prospective coachees get to see the list and select three people who they think they'd be comfortable with. This creates a jigsaw puzzle for the head of PD. He's the only person who ever sees this. Steve and I never see this. He knows the different roles that they're in. He likes to keep people from separate departments, so there's no line manager issues. Occasionally, we get people who want to be coached by their line manager, and actually, it's worked quite well two or three times. But our default is not to do that. So we have these systems to make the coaching chemistry work, and I think that's why our 95% hit rate is achieved. And I just think that staff come into the school, they have a briefing early on for all new members of staff only. They hear about what coaching is, what mentoring is, and we encourage them, please speak to people in your department who've done coaching. And then when we offer anyone wants to be coached, we have quite a few people of the new people or people who've been in the school 1 year, maybe a year to get their legs under the table and just feeling good about everything. We have quite a few come in from that. So we know that the word of mouth confidentiality, dignity, empowerment. I think those values and that combination and how we've built the systems around that, I think that's quite unique as well.
There is one more thing, I think. You say unique selling point, Richard. We are a LaSallian school and we have our brothers are taking their IPGC. So they're being trained up as classroom teachers as well as brothers too and following their faith. And the companioning model in the LaSallian brothers' growth and coaching are exceptionally aligned. And so what we've, I think Russell's organized this more than anybody and with the person who's running the LaSallian training program is that we've been coaching some of the brothers in some of the coach methods because it is so strongly aligned to what they believe in and how they operate that it gives them a unique dimension to their teacher training. And we call it NQT plus. So they do their NQT plus year and I'm currently coaching and teaching one of the brothers how to become a coach. And so that's a unique selling point to us.
I love that you used the word in there, companion and companioning.
Companioning, yeah. That's a LaSallian word. But just walking beside somebody, just like coaching.
Yeah, which is terrific, which is why you say it is so aligned, you know, which is terrific. Gentlemen, in most of my podcast conversations, we get to this stage and I ask about what's coaching going to look like maybe in a year's time, 5, 10 years time. So I would love to hear some of the plans you guys have to take coaching to the next level. Steve, do you want to jump in there first?
Well, we've already mentioned C4 PD. Russ and I have got a plan for the next few years to roll out C4... And so if we can get coaching to impact as many people as possible without asking them to do the 10 sessions... So we're kind of sneaking it in, but coach approach everywhere. And this year we have, we've brought in C4 tutees. We've trained the trainers. We've created a program and they've taken those coaching skills, into their, tutor groups. And I've been teaching this to grade 9 students, some basic, some rudimentary coaching skills, how they can, be better at listening and better at not giving advice and, holding their friends to, holding them safe and holding them to account. So growing up tools, really. C4 tutees. And we also do C4 leavers. Some of our colleagues obviously move on. And rather than having as well as having an exit interview with somebody you may not know, let's say one of our brother president, we're also offering see for leavers. So I might see somebody leaving in December and let them fathom out what transition looks like for them and let them feel happy with that, because they've already made their choice to leave. And it's a big move to go back home to Australia or the UK or wherever you're from. How do we do this compassionately? How do we do this? So it's really staying with my values and to know that I made the right decision. So that's two of our C4 suite that we brought in this year.
In the C for leavers, I have been in schools where when you leave, you're not going to get any, once you've handed in your notice, you're not going to get any PD after that. There's going to be no budget spent. And I get the impression that's quite common in schools in England. I don't know about Australia and other places. However, because of our LaSallian ethos here, the head of PD, I was surprised at how keen he was. Yes, we should invest in the people who are leaving the school. We should have them leaving feeling that they've had a great time here, that they've gained from here, and they're taking part of what they got from here to another place. So I thought that was a really great act of leadership to kind of really spur us on to develop this. And this is the only school I've ever been in where, I'm not kidding, five members of staff have returned to it. They've left for three, four, 5 years. One's left to England, another Australia, and they come back to teach at the school. Now, most of that happened before we did the See for Leavers. It's a part of the ethos here. But I really think that developing a school where we have the See for the student leaders, See for Leavers staff, I think we'll create a culture where people keep coming back. And I see that as what can coaching do for a school 5 years, 10 years down the line.
There's a little story as well, actually, Richard, which is really powerful. We just had a young man join us in science. And the reason he joined our school is because we have a coaching program. He's traveled all the way from Canada.
Wow. So where you see right across the globe, one of the most common headlines in education is teacher retention issues. So, schools cannot retain teachers for a whole host of different reasons. But there you have people not only leaving but coming back after a number of years, but actively seeking out your school because of the coaching programs, which is terrific. So again, folks who are listening, particularly heads who are listening, there's another big plug for a very effective, robust coaching program in your school, which is super useful. Any other thoughts, Steve, on that question?
Well, for me, it's the C4, and as Russell's mentioned, the coaching department. Now we're in the process of making sure that we can make sure the pupil-teacher ratio works. If Russell and I are given some time, because all the admin and all the training that we just do in our own time, and we've done for the last 7, 8, 9 years. We're given coaching time. So I'm not teaching music. I'm given time to coach my colleagues, but everything else we do is in our own time. And we're pushing for, responsibility time to run the program and take it to its next level and do the administration for C4 leavers or C4 student leadership or C4, administration staff. And we need some time for that. So that's what the future holds for Russell and I, think, at the school.
Fantastic. Russell, any final thoughts on what's coming up in the future?
Yeah, I put forward this idea many years ago that a coaching department in a school makes sense.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look like it now. And if you were 30 years ago, maybe 30, 35 years ago, there were no real SEN, special educational needs departments in school. Whereas now, if I was applying to a school and they didn't have one, I'd be like, that doesn't seem right to me. there's something not being done correctly in that school. And I think that's where we are now, but for coaching. And I can imagine a time in 20, 30 years from now, where whether it's on the school level that there's a coaching department, or in a country like Singapore, where all the ed psychs are not on a school level, the educational psychologists have their own department within the Ministry of Education itself. And one of the people who I trained and my coaching with happened to be the person who ran it for the whole country. And they ran this department, which has 60 are also which served 200 schools. Singapore's a lot smaller than most countries. So 200 schools served by the central department. So some schools, some ministries of education could have that kind of model, but for coaching. Or it could be that you have a group of schools in a consortium, perhaps in more than in England. Or it could be like international schools would probably have their own in-house ones. But I think the ripple effect of having coaching in schools is beginning to be researched and is having yielding positive value for schools beyond the coach and the coachee. I was surprised by a paper that I read where it's showing there was a positive impact on people who were neither the coach nor the coachee, but worked with the coachee. And I was like, huh. So it's not just those who are being directly coached that can benefit here. It can be wider. So I think greater awareness and impact of this is a part of the future.
But I think when you're speaking there, there's obviously changes needed at a system level right across the globe. And hopefully we'll get some listeners, you know, who maybe are in that position, and that will be terrific. But I think even in your particular context, when you look at what you've achieved in the last 10 to 12 years, which is not in the history of the school or, you know, the 360 years, you know, compared to that, what you've achieved in the last 10 to 12 years, you know, I think the lack of a coaching department could be coming up a lot sooner than you think. When you see what you've actually achieved so far, which is really inspiring, you know, it's fantastic. A final question to both of you. Some of our listeners will obviously be at the very start of their coaching journey, and they're listening to podcasts like this one. They're reading articles, and they're maybe, I suppose, dipping their toes in the water as such. Let's assume that they're not members of SLT. Okay, what would your advice be to them if they wanted to move forward with coaching in their school? Steve, you want to go first, and then Russell jump in after.
I think I've got two. I've got a few actually, but I'm just going to go with two. I think the first thing you need to do is get some good coach training. Get really, really happy with what coaching is yourself. Will be my first bit of advice. And the second would be to maybe run volunteer something like a professional learning community, where you can reach out to SLT and say, I've got this idea. I know it fits into the school improvement plan, or professional learning communities will fit into school improvement plan. Can I run it? And just volunteer, start small, and they will come.
I think you're right. That quality thing is really important. You know, so what we're doing is, you know, the best possible quality that it can be. But that's great advice, Steve. Russell, any thoughts?
A few, but I'll try and distill down. Steve touched on the first quality, then quantity, the low-hanging fruit. In your context, in your school, what would be low-hanging fruit? And the low-hanging fruit would be a way of implementing coaching, which is more likely to get people, one, trusting in it, feeling benefit from it, and motivated, inspired themselves to, I want to be a coach too. I think if you've got, I don't know what that would look in different schools. That's maybe part of the beauty of this. It would be different everywhere. But what is low-hanging fruit in my school? That would be one thing. A second is, I think, get to know some of the research. Get to know, so the instructional coaching group, that they've got some good work that they've done with people like Jim Knight and Christian van Nieuwenberg, where they're actually working with schools, with individuals who coach and with coachees, seeing what measurable benefits are there for individuals, but also for the school, and look at the conclusions that are coming out. And I predict some of those conclusions will be that don't have a system where people have a coach 2, 3, 4 times a year. It's not enough. Because one, from the coachee side, that is a lot of time passes between those meetings. From the coach side, it's they're not being trained up to become great coaches if they're only if they've got three coaches and they see three or four times each, that's 12 in a year. I typically get 50 coaches coaching hours in a year. So it's totally different on what that, the impact of that on the quality. So I think, and research does show that it's got this graph of, I knew what the paper was. It had self-reported gain or benefit from coaching against number of coaching meetings. And it was what you'd predict, this nice straight line going up. And we reached about 7 or 8 and it plateaued off. And what my take from that was, if people are only being coached 3 or 4 times, they haven't reached their optimal gain of being coached yet. So delve into the coaching research and use that to inform your systems that you're going to use, and weave in your school values into the systems.
And keep your senior leadership team aware of that research as well. Get that data. Quantify this incredible space. I think that's the future.
Yeah, well, we have a folder of about 20 different research papers that there was one holiday where me, Steve and Dan, we took a few each and we read through them and we fed together. Now, I wish we'd done that in year one. Not in year three.
We read some of this summer though, didn't we, Russell? We got some stuff from Chris Munro. He sent us some stuff. And I know there's lots on your website as well, Richard. So there's plenty to get your teeth into.
There is certainly no shortage of material out there, Steve. You're absolutely right. Well, I think that's a perfect point to bring our conversation to a close today. I want to extend a huge thanks to both you, Steve, and Russell for sharing your time, insights, and experiences with us. It's been inspiring to hear about the pioneering work you're both doing to embed coaching at St. Joseph's Institution International and the impact it's having across your school community. Wishing you both continued success as you build on this impressive foundation and continue to take coaching to new heights in the years ahead. For our listeners, if you'd like to see their action and work, I highly recommend checking out SJI's annual Coach Up event, which offers a fantastic glimpse into their coaching culture. And remember, there are plenty of free resources available on our own website, growthcoaching.com.au, where you can explore more about how coaching can make a difference in your educational setting. Thank you for tuning in today, and we look forward to joining you again in our next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.